Blog Talk Radio.
Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hello, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast or vice versa, here today with another awesome guest. And we're going to talk about flowers and Japan, which I'm real excited to hear about because I have some poets that write for my magazine that are from Japan, and it's just so cool. It's just a cool country. Anyways, okay, well, a little bit of what's going on. Well, you don't want to hear what's been going on with me, all my electrical and all of that kind of woes, because my house was hit with a lightning bolt. But anyways, I'm fine. Everything's fine. So, you know, first of all, Mystic Living today, okay? Now, it's July 12th, so about the 20th or so, I'll be sending out my reminders for articles, poetry, anything that you would like to submit for the magazine. I just need a link and an image. I like to put images with all the articles, excerpts, whatever it is. Of course, the excerpts, I would use the book cover. But you can send it to StarsCast, S-T-A-R-Z, like in zebra, C-A-S-T, at mysticlivingtoday.com, and I will get it. And it can be basically most anything. I mean, it doesn't have to be metaphysical. It doesn't have to be spiritual. I have people from Savannah going to send me some stuff about boats and what's going on there. So you see, it can be really anything. And the reason I'm so close to Savannah, my granddaughter goes to SCAD, which is an art school, so it's got my heart anyways. And so anything that's of good value and that I want to put out and it's free, I'll do it because I like the world to see different things and know about all kinds of people and the authors and poets and entertainers that I do and I have interviewed. And these are really not interviews. Everybody knows it's more like a talk show. I talk, and everybody knows I can talk up a storm, can't I? Anyways, okay, so that's that. And then I have Stars with a Z, psychics.com. That's a site with my advisors. It's not a hokey site. It's very legitimate. I interview all of them personally. Some have been with me when I had just my first site, Planet Stars, and I had a room on America Online and a room in Microsoft Community, which you had to be approved. You couldn't have had a criminal record. They wouldn't have given you a community room, which I got. I was pretty honored to get that, but that all fizzled away, and look what we have now. The digital world has gone cuckoo. But anyways, that, you know, Stars has got some specials. First-time clients have 5 minutes for $5, 15 minutes and $25 each for 15, you know, 15 minutes for $15 and 25 minutes for $25. And it's all, you know, that's a first-time client only. I have people, believe it or not, that try to get a second account. But my webmaster and I have been doing this a long time, and we figured it out. And we have a setup that you really can't get away with. and it, you know, it's sad to say, but you have to do that. People are always looking for something close to free, but I have to remind them sometimes that this is a business. And that we have second-time rates. I mean, not second-time, but if you're not a first-time client, I have better cost-effective rates for people because I know it's been difficult. Although I read somewhere that I think things are picking up all over the world. The economy is changing. And you have to know that the pendulum always swings back. It will come back. It's not like, oh my gosh, we're doomed. No, don't believe that. That's not true. But anyways, I want to get on with my guest right now. She's a beautiful lady. And we were kind of like, we didn't know whether we were going to do the show or not because of my phones. But, yay, we're here. She's written some several books, and she's got her latest book out. I believe it was published, I want to say, in June. But she'll correct me, I'm sure, if it wasn't in June. And she's got a couple of them. Well, let me see here. Yeah, May 26th it was. Pardon me. She has the latest book out. But I want to welcome Joan Diane Stamm. Joan, how are you today with all of this chaos because of Natalie, huh?
Oh, I'm great. Yeah, it's really nice here. I'm in Washington State. It's a sunny day, which is we always welcome here in Washington.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm in South Carolina, so we get a lot of sun. But I'm originally from Michigan, so to me, that's, you know, that was doom and gloom up there. I mean, it was... When it got ugly, it stayed ugly. I mean, because we were surrounded by the lakes. But down here, now my weather will stay until October, November. It'll stay really nice and warm. And we don't get much of a winter here. But it's nice. It's nice. Mm. But anyway, let's get on with you. Now, you have, I'm on your site, you have one book that's called The Pilgrimage in Japan. I want to know how... did you start writing in the first place? I always ask my guests, because I'd like to know, I mean, did you always write when you were, like, in school, or how did you start writing?
No, I haven't always been a writer. I maybe started in my 30s. I'm trying to think back. I used to be a kindergarten teacher, and I read a lot of children's books, and I started getting interested in writing for children. And then it just kind of went from there. I wrote children's books. Only one of them got published. It was called If I Touched an Eagle, and it was sort of an educational book. It was about oil spills, but it was fiction. And then, you know, I went to graduate school in my 40s. I studied writing and literature at Bennington College. And I thought I wanted to be a fiction writer, but I had a professor who worked with me on nonfiction, and I realized that really nonfiction was more my venue. And then I spent some time in Japan, and I started writing about Ikebana, which is the art of Japanese flower arranging. And I had a teacher, again, at Bennington, who took a real interest in that subject, which kind of surprised me because I wasn't really sure if anybody would be interested in it. But she was, and then I just started going from there.
But it's real, you know, it makes sense. I mean, well, it's kind of strange when you think about your life. You start here, and then you go there. Now, the reason I'm so interested in Japan and your book is because I have authors, poets, that write for my magazine. And the cutest thing is, and I see how you sign your name sometimes, or with me you did below Joan, is I had this one guy, he writes all of, he'll send me a paragraph and then beneath it, it'll be in Japanese.
No.
Like I know what he's saying, right? But he does it because it's a joke between us because the first time he wrote to me, he wrote in Japanese. I wrote him back. I said, I can't read this, you know? And so I finally said to him, will you write my name in Japanese? And within 5 minutes, I had it. And so now it's just this cute little thing between us. He'll put the paragraph in English, and then beneath it he'll do it in Japanese. And I love it. I really – it's almost like – and you'll have to explain this, but to me it's almost like they're like little sticks. I call them sticks, but they're not. They're lines. I call them sticks that go this way, down, across, and all of that. But, okay, so why did you go to Japan?
Well, my sister went to Japan to teach English, and I was at a point in my life that I really needed a change. I didn't like my job. I was recently divorced, and I thought, well, I'm going to Japan, too. So
you might as well, right?
Might as well. She had a house in the country that was provided by the school she taught at, and so I had a place to live. I knew I could get a job teaching English, and I just really needed a change. So off I went, and then it went from there. I didn't expect to fall in love with Japan as much as I did, but it ended up influencing what I wrote about, my art forms, just about everything. And I've been back several times, many, many times since. to explore.
Wow. And I think, isn't that a country that a lot of Americans go to? And is it easy to adjust to their culture? And do people speak English there? I mean, I've never been out of the United States, so I have no clue. So that's why I'm asking you. So I arrive there, get off the plane, and then what? Are they all talking Japanese to me, or do I have to have a translator? What is that like?
It is difficult in Japan, which is why, you know, it's difficult unless you do speak the language. And I don't speak Japanese. I mean, I learned enough to survive there and get around. But, you know, you feel a lot of times illiterate because you can't read anything. And a lot of people might know English, but they're very reserved and they don't like to speak English. So, yeah, it can be really difficult to get around in Japan. It's kind of challenging. And to really get outside of the major cities, it really helps to know some Japanese. And so
it really, really – yeah, it does. And, you know, the young man that my granddaughter is seeing – his family is just now moving over to Japan. They were in Greece. I mean, his job takes him everywhere, and he stays in the country for like 3 years. And, you know, he almost was going to go, but, of course, you know, he's crazy about my granddaughter, so he decided not to. But I think to myself, you know, such an opportunity. Now you're going to ever get to do this again and be I guess they're going to be in Okinawa, which – he said it's really kind of nice. I don't know. Is it? Is that a nice city?
Well, Okinawa is a group of islands to the south, and I've never been there. It's very far away from where I lived, and it's more tropical. It's very tropical and warm in the wintertime.
Oh, okay. So then that's why it's supposed to be really, really, really nice. But, I mean, you know what amazes me is that people get to stay in these countries and absorb the culture and learn a little bit of the language and the food. You know, I mean, I'm so curious, not ever leaving the United States. But you know what? Now, do they have a lot of do they cook a lot with rice, white rice? I don't eat white rice. Actually, white rice is not good for you because it ends up becoming paste.
They do eat a lot of white rice.
Do they? But it's a special
kind
of rice. I mean, it's not like the rice we have here, right?
Well, yeah. It might be a different kind of rice, but it's still white rice. Yeah, they're not into brown rice like we are here.
Oh, I love brown rice. I don't eat white rice at all, ever. I don't. It's not good for you.
It's really good. The food is really good in Japan, and it's presented in such a beautiful way. It's a feast for the eyes.
And it's probably like some of these places that you go for Japanese food, their presentation, how they prepare in front of you, is a sight to behold.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what it's like if I were to go to Japan and go to a restaurant. I wouldn't probably go with anybody who, unless I had somebody that was Japanese with me. I mean, that boggles my mind. You know, I'll just walk in and I'll be all talking these languages and the menu's written in Japanese. Now what do I do? You know?
Yeah, that would be difficult. A lot of times there's pictures or there can be pictures or, you know, the Japanese are very accommodating. And so if you found yourself in a situation like that, they would bend over backwards to figure it out.
Yeah, raise your hand
you.
And say, little help over here, right?
Yeah.
That would be me. Yeah. That would be me. But anyways, yeah, their food. But, you know, I think the food here that's cooked is different than what over there. I mean, you get the real stuff in Japan, right? I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just asking because, I'm such a novice.
Well, unless you live in a major U.S. city, it's pretty hard to find authentic Japanese food. But in some places, yeah, you can find it. And but where I live now, there wouldn't be any really authentic Japanese food. But, you know, if I lived in Seattle or, you know, if you were in San Francisco or New York or someplace like that.
Yeah, awesome.
But, you know, the nice thing about Japanese food, too, is that there's a whole ceramic industry that's kind of built around serving dishes. And so a really amazing Japanese meal might have 10 little small dishes, but they're all on different kinds of ceramic plates or bowls. And so even that is just a feast for the eyes. It's just so beautiful.
So now your first book, A Pilgrimage in Japan, was basically about you being there. Is that what that book is about? Because I want to, you've got the 33 temples of Kanon. Is that what it's called, or is it Kanon?
Yeah, it's Kanon.
Kanon. Well, I was getting there, right?
Kanon is a Japanese word for Kuan Yin. Maybe you've heard, most people have heard of Kuan Yin or Guan Yin. She's the goddess of mercy.
Okay.
And so there are pilgrimages all over Japan devoted to this bodhisattva. And so the one we went on is probably the most beautiful of the Kanon pilgrimages. And it's not a pilgrimage that it's not a walking pilgrimage like some of them are, like the one in Shikoku. A lot of people have heard about that one. We did take public transportation to get to the temples, but then some of the temples were up in the mountains, and so we did hike, a lot of hiking up in the mountains. And then they're spread over a very wide area, so we got to see a part of Japan we hadn't visited before. And some of them were just really outstanding. There's a couple of World Heritage sites along this pilgrimage with incredible temples and grounds and beautiful. One of them has like 1,000 blooming cherry trees, and another one has this famous waterfall, and just a lot of really beautiful parts of Japan. And because, you know, there were 33 of these temples, it took us 3 trips to Japan to complete it, so we could only go for a short period of time. And the longest one was a month. The first trip we went for a month. And we covered, I think, 19 temples, and then we went back and did a few more, and then the last trip we did just a few because I was also there and studying Ikebana, so I stayed longer.
Okay, now what is Ikebana? I have to ask that.
Yeah, that's Japanese flower arranging. And
okay,
First book, my first book, Heaven and Earth Are Flowers, Reflections on Ikebana and Buddhism, is about that also. And then my last book, the one that just came out, The Language of Flowers in the Time of COVID, Finding Solace in Zen, Nature, and Ikebana, is about exploring flowers a little bit more deeply. And with COVID-19, of course, is kind of the backdrop. So that book was started because I had to cancel my trip to Japan. I was planning to go to Japan in 2020 in April. I had all my reservations. I'd been planning it for a really long time. And I was planning to research flower temples. There's a flower temple pilgrimage in Japan that I wanted to see. Yeah, I wanted to see a lot of these temples. They've converted their grounds to flower gardens. And they refer to the flowers as little Buddhas. That really, as a Buddhist, that very much intrigued me. And so I was planning to go to visit a lot of these places in the spring when the flowers are blooming and to talk to some of the monks about, you know, what they're doing there and why they're converting their temples to flower gardens. So I was quite excited about that trip, and I was planning to be gone almost a whole month of April with a couple friends. But then, of course, we know what happened. And in April, I think I was just about almost in lockdown. I was pretty much spending a lot of time in my own garden.
Yeah, it was. It was really a dire time for the world. I work at home. Didn't really miss a beat for me. The thing of it is that, you know, then they started with the vaccinations. Then you had to wear a mask and Now, you know, a lot of people passed away from the, I don't know that it was necessary. Well, I guess it was COVID, but it would affect their lungs. And, I mean, you know, my son was very, very picky about who came around me. And, no, Mom, you're not going there. I said, well, why? I wear a mask. No, you're not going.
No.
He said, I'm not going to risk some yahoo touching you, and then by some strange thing, you don't wash your hands and you touch your face or whatever. He was very, very protective of me, which I'm grateful. I had the one vaccination, and then I got the booster. That's it. I didn't get the third one because my son had gotten, and he said, Mom, I don't want you to get this one. And I said, why? He said, because it's going to make you deathly ill. And sometimes that's what happens. You get so ill from a vaccination that it actually does you in. You know, makes you really, and I have asthma, I have allergies. So, I mean, I was confined. But you know, it's really funny because once you get used to being home, you're home. I mean, you know, I rode my bike. I have a stationary bike. I still have my sites online. I still did my magazine. I didn't really miss a beat. It was really good for me. But for a lot of people, they lost their jobs. Well, you know the whole scenario in the United States.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
And I think it's still filtering. Places are still closing because of it, because it could never. And that's so sad for me. I mean, my business struggled a bit, but that's because people didn't have the money. They don't have the money. It's called. It's considered entertainment, because a magazine I do for free. You don't have to pay to have anything put in it. Eventually, if I change it to an online flip magazine, then I'll get ads and stuff. But I couldn't do it, you know, because my other business slowed down, and I had to watch every little penny that went out. So, yeah, and I see these businesses closing, and it's very sad. I just hate it. All these people, and some people, it's just, you know, family businesses, and they don't know what to do now. They had them for 25 years. It just boggles my mind that it could get that bad. And they still don't really know where it came from. Did it come from Japan? I mean, China? Who knows? Do we know? I don't think we're going to ever know. All I know is it's on its way out. I mean, maybe there's still some residue some places. But I remained okay, healthy. I was very fortunate.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't get COVID where I lived on an island. I'm not living there now, but I lived on an island in the Salish Sea on a mountain. I was very isolated. And since I wasn't able to go to Japan and write a book about these flower temples, I ended up writing about flowers in the context of my own yard and in the context of the pandemic. And so that's kind of what my last book is about. The language of flowers in the time of COVID, flowers being a kind of metaphor for a lot that was going on. And also there's a lot of flower lore and symbolism. And so the book weaves in and out of all the, everything that was happening in our society and in the world, in and out of different ideas and about flowers and how flowers give us comfort and solace.
Oh, my gosh, you know, that when I was thinking about talking to you after these 2 weeks that I have had, because I even lost my air conditioning, I thought to myself, the beauty of flowers, just look at a flower and and how it was nothing. It was either a seed or a bulb or something, and it grew into this beautiful, I have these little orange, I have tons of pine trees around my house. But I have these little orange, like trumpet flowers. They're real tiny. Every once in a while, I look up and I smile because to me, that's just part of God's gift to us, these beautiful flowers to make us smile and appreciate. And usually I'll tell people when I write something for my blog or whatever, look outside. It's a beautiful world. Just look outside. That's all you have to do, and you'll see it. Animals, trees, flowers, the sky. Grasses, there's just so much. And for you to write about this is very, it's important to me because flowers, I mean, everybody has a favorite flower. I'm trying to think what mine is. I don't know that I even have one. I love the smell of gardenia, but I also love the look of a yellow rose. Not red, but the yellow.
Yeah.
So do you have a favorite flower?
Yeah, people ask me that. You know, it's really hard to have a favorite because all flowers are really beautiful in their own way. And each is unique, and I just try to appreciate all of them for what they are, although I am a little partial to peonies and wisteria.
Yeah, well, I have those on, yeah, on the show page. But the wisteria, yeah. Oh, what the, but I mean, if we sat down and talked about all the flowers, the kinds, mm-hmm. we would sit for hours because there's so many. And, you know, a lot of them come in different, they'll come in different colors. If you like a deep purple, if you like a pink, red, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. you can find something that's going to spark your interest. But
yeah,
flowers
exactly.
and the scent of flowers, too. Can make you feel, like I said, I like the smell of gardenia a lot. Mm. I like that. And every once in a while, you know, I'll get these little wax melts that I can melt in this little thing that I have. But it's really hard to find the right scent. I mean, they come up with these weird things like, oh, the sea and the this. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't want all this stuff. I just want something simple, right? So you have to go seeking them out. But
yeah,
I know.
The flowers,
go ahead, hon.
Oh, the flowers that I focus on in the language of flowers in the time of COVID are traditionally thought of as Japanese flowers or Asian flowers. Most of them originated there, although except for one, cosmos, did not originate there, but they do really love cosmos in Japan. And one of the temples, the only flower temple that I've actually saw, that was in a trip in 2018, was called the Cosmos Temple. And so I don't know if cosmos is pretty widespread, so you probably have it where you live, but it's just a really simple flower.
It's a big flower, isn't it, if I'm thinking right? Is it a? We had it in Michigan. My mother-in-law had them in her garden.
My mother always grew them, too, because they're really easy to grow.
And foxglove, that's another one, foxglove she used to have. But are most flowers really from Japan? I mean, like wisteria, that's from Japan?
Well, wisteria is from Asia, and peonies are from Asia. Some of them originated in China and then were brought to Japan. Wisteria grows wild in Japan. It twines up around the trees.
Oh, how beautiful.
I mean,
I would love that. But they bloom only at a certain time of the year, though, right?
Well, they bloom in around May, I think it would be. And there's all these wisteria tunnels. They have, they'll have archways and wisteria growing along these archways. And you can actually walk through this long tunnel of wisteria flowers. I mean, their flower gardens in Japan are incredible. And chrysanthemums and caria. A lot of those
now,
flowers are
Why is it that Japan is so much about flowers? Did it start from way back? What's the history with that? I mean,
well,
it sounds to me like they really do it upright. They really present them right, just like they do their food, you know?
Right. Yeah, well, there's just the Japanese aesthetic is amazing. And they have very much attention to detail and very beauty-oriented. But also their native religion, if you want to call it a religion, is Shinto. And Shinto honors nature in all forms, even everything is considered to have a spiritual essence, even rocks and trees, everything, flowers, mountains. And so that was the religion in Japan before Buddhism came over from Korea and China. And so I think it's just in the culture a reverence for nature. And so a lot of outings that people go on in Japan are to places where there are flowers. In the spring, when the cherry blossoms are blooming, they actually take a picnic blanket out underneath the cherry trees and have a party. And it's a huge thing, a huge celebration. To celebrate spring is a major thing in Japan. And there's cherry blossom forecasters where they let people know, you know, when the cherry blossoms are just starting to bud and when they're blooming. And you know, they're moving on up the island from Okinawa. They start in Okinawa because it's in the south, and it goes up through the island of Honshu and Hokkaido. And so, you know, you could actually follow the season for months, probably, if you wanted to do that. Probably some people do. I don't know. But cherry blossoms and plum blossoms. Plum actually blooms before cherry blossoms. They're also very much celebrated in Japan because they bloom oftentimes when it's still cold. There could even be snow on the ground. And so they're considered to be one of the three friends of winter because they bloom
The plum, is that the flower before it comes to a fruit, or is it just called the plum?
It's plum blossoms is the flower before the fruit, although somebody else asked me about this, about are there a lot of cherry, like the cherries, a fruit cherry.
Right.
And a lot of these trees aren't grown for their fruit. They're grown for their flowers.
And I bet you there's a way to propagate them so that they just blossom. Because they mix them. They know how to do it. I can't wait to write to one of my authors. He's gonna die laughing because he's going to say to me, now you learned about my country. kind of, sort of, because it's really funny because in the beginning, he's been writing for my magazine for quite a few years, but in the very beginning, he was very official. I can almost see him presenting something to me and bowing. This is no joke.
No.
I could tell in his emails it was, he was very respectful. And now he's kind of cut up a little bit in his emails because when I was laughing, I said, why do you write with all these sticks? And he wrote back right away and he said, those aren't sticks. I wrote back, that's what they look like to me. But they're just lines, and to be able to write in Japanese has got to be something. I mean, I don't know. I think there's a lot of languages that are very difficult, and I'm wondering if Japanese isn't one of them.
Well, it is very difficult because they have three alphabets. They have characters I guess it would be called characters that are for foreign words. And then they have characters that are just Japanese words. And then there's the kanji, which comes from China. And so the name you saw in my email is actually the kanji. They're Chinese characters, but they're used, of course, in Japan. And it's my name, Jo-An, in kanji characters. So writing kanji is an art form in Japan, the calligraphy that they do. It's a practice. It's actually a do, which is a way, just like kado is the way of flowers. There's shodo, which is the way of calligraphy. And so people spend years and years and years practicing cursive kanji writing, you could say. It's beautiful to look at. It's very artistic.
It really is. I mean, it's fascinating, and I didn't, I suppose if I would have asked him, I'm going to make a copy. Tell me what this is. Tell me what this means. What is this, a letter? Is this the first part of my name? He would do it because I've known him for years now. And then I have another man two others that write, they're from China. Now that's a hoot and a half right there. Same thing. They will send me their poetry, and after a paragraph, I get it in Chinese.
That's nice. Yeah.
Well, it is really nice because it gives me a sense of their culture. It gives me a nice feeling that they want me to present it. They wanted to present it to me so I could see, because they knew probably by my emails, because my emails are very personal, that I would love to know about it, and I really, really do. Mm-hmm. I really, really do. Now, okay, I have a question. Do flowers really have a language aside from the Victorian meetings? Do they all have a language of some kind?
Well, yeah, there's a word for it in Japanese. It's called hanakotoba. Hana is flowers.
Hanakotoba. Hanakotoba. Mm-hmm. Oh, I learned a word. Okay.
Yeah, hana means flower in Japanese. One of the words for flowers. There are other words for flower, but I think when you the language of flowers, there's a feeling that flowers have. In Japanese culture in particular, there might be a feeling ascribed to a certain flower, like wisteria, for example. can be seen as a little bit melancholy, the way it hangs down, the purple hanging down. But of course, it's also beautiful, and so it's joyful. And so a lot of flowers have a kind of double meaning because they are seen in different ways, in different lights, and they're changeable. Hydrangea, for example, is also a flower that there's a debate whether people enjoy seeing hydrangea in the rainy season, which is when they bloom in Japan, or whether they would like to see them under blue sky. And so there's just a way of relating to the flower that's just a little bit deeper than we have in our culture, because they're looking at it from a kind of emotional point of view, not just, oh, that's beautiful, but, oh, how does that make me feel?
Oh.
And so in that sense, there's a language. Just like the cosmos is not native to Japan, but the Japanese love cosmos because the way they sway in the wind, and they're very kind of light and ethereal and poetic, and so they just see them differently.
But it's amazing. Now, you see, that's why, you know, that's why there's so much intelligence over there, because they take the time to learn the meaning of everything. They, like over here, we're helter-skelter. Yeah, but the culture over there is, it's refined. I've always respected Japan for that. I've always felt that they have a grip on everything, not like us. We kind of like flounder around, and, you know, we just fly by and, oh, I'll go here, I'll do this, I'll do that. I mean, there is a real reason for things for them, and I think that's why there's so much intelligence there. You know, a lot of computer experts come from there. Very smart people come from there.
Yeah.
But you know what, Joan, it's the thing of it is that's how they begin when they're little. It's their training. It's their, don't just go to school and use crayons. You're going to use your brain, whether it be of high intelligence or not. Because I think what they can do is they can groom you. If they see anything in you, like you and I probably would do very well there as little kids. But just say, for example, you get some kids over there that, you know, they just want to have fun and play games and all of that. Maybe they don't take the time with you as they would with somebody who really wants to learn. And I don't know what their schools are like. Do you know?
No, I don't really know that much about the schools. I just know that children, you see young children off a lot of times by themselves, riding the trains by themselves, which there's just a safety there that doesn't exist here. I was,
right.
Many times aghast at seeing young children wandering, you know, up the street or walking home alone or on the train by themselves. It's like, wow, that wouldn't happen here at all. So there's a certain safety and protection of children, and they're taught art also at a young age. A lot of the children's art that you see in Japan is you can see that it's already being, you know, being developed. So
right. You know, I got to tell you something. You're going to appreciate this from this Japanese poet that I have, friend. I call him my friend. He calls me dear one, and he told me a story about his mother. Well, when his father was alive, and you're going to love this, he writes to me all the time, even in between the magazine, but he'll tell me the story about his father, what he used to do for his mother. Every day, he would take the sheets off the bed and hang them, take them outside and shake them and fluff them. Can you imagine that? Every single day. So he told me this, but then, you know, of course, his father passed away. So a little bit of time went by, and I said, you know, his name is Chan Ming, and I said, you know, I have a question for you. Who shakes the sheets out for your mother now? I knew what he was going to tell me. And he wrote me back. He said, of course I do, every single day. So you see how respectful they have. They learn respect. It's not what we have. I mean, I could beat respect into people here, and I don't understand it, but it's how they're raised. And these kids over there are raised with the utmost respect of one another and things and beauty, and the culture is just so unique. This boyfriend of my granddaughter, I said to him, you really should have gone there for a while. I think you're missing out. I said, because his parents will be there for 3 years. I said, because you, I mean, he's been to all these other countries. I said, why not go there? And live in style. See, because the father, you know, they set him up in a house, and it's all this grand new move, everything from here over to there, the cars, whatever, a nice job, let's put it that way. And I said, you would have lived in a nice style. He said, yeah, but I wouldn't have been around your granddaughter. And I said, no, that's true. You know, however, sometimes, and probably he'll kick himself, well, maybe he'll still go there because they're going to be there 3 years. He'll say, why didn't I go? I should have went.
Is going to Okinawa?
Yes, that's his family, yeah. And they're bringing some of the kids. Now, there's older, two girls that are older. They're in their 20s, and they're set at their jobs and all that kind of stuff. So they, of course, did not want to go. But he could have gone. He's not set in anything, and I think it was a big mistake. So I'm really hoping, and he's a nice young man. I don't necessarily think he's for my granddaughter, but I can't, you know, you can't make their choices, of course. But he doesn't have a lot of looking ahead, and he's got a lot of ideas and dreams, but I think most of them are dreams. But anyways, to go there would be such an experience. I mean, I would be petrified if I had to go by myself, unless I had a translator with me. Or if I had Joan with me, you know,
well,
you Joan, what is it? What does this mean? What are they saying to me? You know, oh, you look terrible. You look, you know what I'm saying? When are you going to go back?
Yeah, good question. I don't know. I don't have any plans to go back, but
you must go back,
sure,
Joan. You must.
Will.
You must.
Yeah.
You
well,
really.
I'd still like to see some of those flower temples besides the
one
I saw, but I'd love to do that. So I would like to go in the spring because most of the times that I went back to Japan since I lived there were in the fall because fall is also a really special time in Japan. November particularly is a really great month. It's really a horrible month here in Washington State. So it's a great time to travel to Japan. The maple trees are turning red and they're just gorgeous. The mountains are just filled with these gorgeous red trees. Probably much like you see on the East Coast, and the weather's beautiful. It's still really warm. It's sunny. So November is a good time to go to Japan, and that's where we often travel there then. Because in spring, you know, if you have a garden, you kind of want to be home doing your own garden work. But that said, I would like to go back in spring because I would like to see some of these flower gardens and flower temples. And
well, let's get your trip going here. You've got to go.
Yeah, maybe in 2025, I'm not sure. In 2025, there's going to be, it's called the it's a Ikebana World Convention. So they only have that once every 5 years. And it's in Kyoto, which is one of my favorite places. And it's in 2025, so I don't know. I'm sort of thinking about it, but I haven't made any plans yet.
Well, I mean, I sit here and I think to myself, now, you know, I don't know his parents, her young man's parents at all. I only know him. Oh, and I met his one brother. But he mentioned something. He said, well, my mom and dad thought about sending tickets for Jada, that's my granddaughter, and I had to go to Japan for Christmas. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's not going to go over too well. I think you should bring the whole family, myself. But wouldn't that be wonderful? Now, you have to go over there for at least a week, I'm thinking. Is that what it is? Or what's I mean, we're really learning about Japan here because basically that's your background when you think about it. That's, you know so much. You know so much about this. This is just amazing to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
so how what's the length of time?
More than a week.
Okay.
I like to go for minimum 3 weeks because, you know, it's a really long flight to Japan.
Is it really?
Really long. You just think it's never going to end. And so to spend all
and
that time.
And it's not.
On your plane,
yeah.
I don't bring several
books with you, and you've got to bring one of Joan's books about flowers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. take the language of flowers in the time of COVID or something like that. So it's a long flight and there's just so much to see. I just never can take it all in. But if you're going on a tour, if that's your only way of feeling comfortable traveling in Japan, then probably you'll go for a shorter time, maybe 2 weeks or even 10 days.
Yeah.
And they usually pack a lot in on those tours.
Make sure that you get in all the good stuff that you can anyways. You can only do so much. The language of flowers in the time of COVID. Now, finding solace in Zen nature and Ikebana. I love that word. I'm probably going to say that to my son today. or to my granddaughter's young friend. So now basically what is that book about, The Language of Flowers? Tell us about that book.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've already told you quite a bit. I was planning to go to Japan to visit these flower temples, and I had to cancel that. And yet I still have this book idea in my mind. I wanted to write about flowers and the deeper meaning of flowers, and so I just turned to the ones that I was growing, and I was trying to grow more of these Japanese flowers. And then I did a lot of research on the flower lore and symbolism. And so all of that flower language, you could say, is interwoven with just my personal story and what was going on in the nation. There are a lot of things going on in 2020. As you remember, it was we had a lot of riots because of the George Floyd murder. On the West Coast, we had horrible smoke from wildfires, and there were just unprecedented wildfires. We had a really contentious election, which I'm sure people won't forget anytime soon.
In January 6th, I won't forget that either.
Yeah, and then there was that. And the book starts in February during plum blossom time. And actually, it was when COVID first showed up in the United States. It was in Kirkland, Washington, which is where I was staying because I was going to a flower presentation, an Ikebana presentation at the convention center with thousands of people. And so I remember at the time.
Did it get canceled? I'm sure it did, right?
No, it didn't get canceled because it was just beginning.
They didn't know what the effects were going to be. Okay.
We didn't even know what it was, but people were getting sick and dying in a nursing home in the suburb of Seattle. And so we were like washing our hands a lot, but nobody was social distancing. Nobody was wearing masks. Nothing was canceled. So I was and I was still planning to go to Japan in April. So I was in Seattle in February going to this Ikebana extravaganza. And that's when I think it was the cruise ship maybe in Yokohama that all these people were getting sick. And then Japan started canceling all these events. And my friend that I was planning to go to Japan with said, should we still do this trip? And I said, well, I don't know. We need to find out if we can get a refund on our ticket. And I didn't think we could get a refund, and I was still planning to go. But then lo and behold, she got a refund, and I said, well, okay. All of a sudden, just like that, the trip was canceled. And then it just went from there. By the time I came home, we were a few weeks away from being in total lockdown. So that happened in March. So I started writing about plum in February when the thing actually began. And the story ends in February when we got vaccinations. And so I kind of go through all the seasons with flowers and all the things that we experienced during that year. And there's 13 Ikebana arrangements, photos of my arrangements in the book. They're in black and white. I post a lot of them on my Facebook page in color. And so I traced the year through flowers, the seasons, and what was happening in the country. And that's what the book is about. It's about taking solace in nature, which was absolutely saved me during the pandemic.
You're right about that. I agree totally because, I'm not in a rural area. it's a subdivision, but I have a lagoon behind me, man-made. I mean, it sounds like I'm in a big house, but I'm not. But I have a lot of trees, lots of trees and pine trees. They're all pine trees. I think I have the most in the whole subdivision right on my lot, which is dangerous when we have a hurricane because it could come falling down. But the beauty for me is that at night I have deer that come and visit me, and during the day I have all beautiful birds and ducks, mallards. Well, a couple of years ago, I had two mallards come to me, and I think they sense that, they sense that, well, maybe there's food here, you know, well, because she feeds something. We know that. We just sense it. Well, two of them came, and then that year they brought 10 little babies. I call them fuzzers with me, little babies, and I fed them and watched them grow, and they stayed till about October. Then they took off. Well, this year, same thing happened. I've got the two big ones, and then I've got their little babies. And, you know, you can really feel good just sitting out there watching. And, I mean, I have one girlfriend that I don't really see very much now because she's on Hilton Head Island, and I'm in this other town, and I had girlfriends up in Michigan, but they have since passed away, and so I'm really isolated. I have my son and my granddaughter and my daughter-in-law, but I don't, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't really have anybody that I can be social with much, except for online. But when I sit outside, Joan, so I know what you're saying, and I look out, and as soon as I sit out, I have my seed and I have this mix of stuff for the little babies and the mothers. I mean, I spoil them rotten. Even the deer I spoil rotten. My son laughs at me. I cut up the fruit, and no, I don't peel the apples, but I have stuff for them, different blends of, I don't just give them corn. That's not good for them. I mean, I really take good care of them. But I can tell you, sitting out there, I'm out at 7:30 in the morning, and I wait for the ducks to come. And sure enough, I'll see them across the lagoon or in front of me on the bank. And the mothers are looking over, kind of like, then they give the signal, and here they come, all to me. What a feeling. It's just a wonderful feeling, and it makes up for the lack of maybe interaction with people because, you know, the kingdom, the animal kingdom, the bird kingdom, all of that, you know, there's no judgment with you. They don't judge. You know, so being outside. Now, I don't have flowers, though, and I have always wanted to have flowers, but, you know, my deer would probably eat them. There are certain flowers they won't eat, you know. I would love to have flowers. And I have a cat, so I can't have flowers inside because he would eat them and get sick. So, but I have cactus. I have some cactus plants, but I put them in a different window light. You know, the cactus are growing really well there. But my cat, he'd chew on them. He's just a brat. He's a big cat, and so I can't have any. I can't even have like ivy, anything like that in my house because he chews on it. And you never know what's going to make him sick. And I don't want to do that to him, you know. But I know just the feeling of looking at flowers. Joan, how it makes you feel. And you have seen so many.
Yeah, well, the island that I lived on 6.5 acres on a mountain, and the deer are absolutely voracious eaters. I eventually, after a couple of years, I had to get a deer fence because I couldn't grow anything. They would eat it all.
They're like lawnmowers.
Yeah, they're very hungry up there on that island. So, yeah, I had to get a deer fence, and then I could grow whatever I wanted to. And then as long as I made sure that the gates were closed and that they didn't sneak in.
And the
in,
fence was high enough because they can jump. They'll jump over the fence.
I lived in a kind of rocky terrain area, and there were a lot of little trees and everything. So
and where was this at?
This was on an island in the Salish Sea, which is off the coast of Washington. It's close to Vancouver Island.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I lived out there for 15 years, and that's where I wrote both of the last two books that I wrote. I wrote when I was living there, but this last one was a lot about living on that island and what a refuge it was and what solace nature was. And even now, I mean, for anyone, you know, just I would urge people to turn to nature when they feel down or they need to be picked up in some way.
So it's true.
It always picks me up. And doing flower arranging always changes my mood, even if I'm a little bit grumpy or irritable. And I start working with flowers, I immediately start feeling better. So they have a real healing effect.
They do. Now tell me, why did you leave that island? Not to be nosy, but why? Because it was so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of places closed. Also, the ferries. So the only way to get on and off the island, of course, is a ferry. And they were often canceled or they would be late. They weren't very reliable. And it was just kept getting worse. Then the medical situation changed out there. And my sister had also been living out there, and she's a really amazing support for me and a good friend. And she moved off. She moved to the mainland. A lot of it had to do with veterinary care and for different reasons. And so a lot of different reasons started piling up.
Yeah, it just wasn't all like – being contained for you. There were too many things that were falling by the wayside, and that you could make, that you could be living there and feel really good. Like you said, doctors and ferries and grocery stores and whatever, and things really changed. It was probably sad for you to leave, right?
Well, somewhat. I mean, I loved where I lived in a lot of respects. It was just very, very beautiful. But it was also really inconvenient, and it was very isolated, and I didn't like the isolation anymore. I used to have classes at my house and a meditation group at my house and all kinds of things. But, of course, during the pandemic, you couldn't do any of that. And so I was even more isolated, and, you know, it just something had to change. So I changed it.
I changed it, Jesus.
And I'm not really sorry. I mean, the mainland offers so many more opportunities to get involved in all kinds of things and so on. I'm kind of happy about that. It's just another stage of my life.
Exactly. Now you moved on to something else, you know. Why Washington State? I always ask these questions because isn't the weather kind of cold up there?
Well, I grew up in North Dakota.
There you go. She's a northern girl. Okay.
You want to talk about cold.
Yeah, that's true.
My family moved to Washington when I was 12. And so I've lived here most my whole life. I did try to live in California for a while because I really didn't, when I was younger, I really didn't like the weather. And I thought, Southern California, that sounds really good. But I didn't stay there very long. I got lured back by some different reasons I won't go into.
Yeah.
And now I actually don't mind the weather. You know, I really don't like hot weather at all. And so I wouldn't do well in a hot climate. And I like that there's four distinct seasons here.
Yeah.
And, it gets a little gloomy at times, but you can grow just the most amazing plants here. The vegetation on the west side of the mountains is really lush, and I really appreciate that. And so it's a very more of a temperate climate, and so it works for me. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, and you know, me coming from Michigan, I call it the land of ice and snow and ugliness and clouds. I'm going to have to go, but I want to thank you because she's going to cut us off. I want to thank you so much for today, and I want people to go to your site. That's joandstamm.com, and I'm gonna send you a link to the show, and Joan, and maybe you can write something for the magazine if you'd like, or send an excerpt or something that it would continue on. I mean, I could talk to you for hours because I love what you do. And she's telling us 60 seconds, and we're going to be cut off.
But
anyway, thank you so much. And I want to let everybody know I will be back on next week. Looks like 1 to 2, I believe. Yes. And we'll do another show here. And as I always end my shows, and that is, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Everybody have a great day and look outside because it's a beautiful world. Bye, Joan. I love you dearly. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.